wat kan waradu ste wat gwego tanya don has kigo tan on ze wat ahun sadaje un gwa hun wen hadi wan odos ne ne aboriginal voices oska de war nyawar oska ne jota fm cfrc.
Well, thank you, Nathan, for doing that. That's a wonderful part to start our show off every week, each hour. And, you know, I was just wondering what we can do to make it lively again for the rest of this. Go ahead.
Okay, it's 7 o'clock, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. And this is a continuation of Aboriginal Voices, as Douglas has said.
Sorry about that. But I, actually, what I saw was I thought maybe you were about
joking?
To... Yes, yeah, a little bit. So I apologize for that, Sean.
We have like a whole different show going on here. the folks at home just do not get to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit of sign language but it also is similar, like my sign language for
am I not looking at the clock?
Is it time for the station break?
Uh-huh.
It also is the sign language for I'm choking.
Yes.
Or I'm going to cough or anyways, Douglas decided that it was a good idea to pull the fader down on my microphone,
well,
which it is. I don't mean to say that it wasn't. It's just you misread the cue.
I
there.
Certainly did. Yeah. Speaking of cues, that's a perfect one to talk
cue,
about.
Go
fish.
Yeah,
do you like fishing?
Cue, well.
Do you like fishing?
I'm going to go with a no
would you,
on that.
What? A no? Oh,
no,
man.
Like back in the day when mm-hmm. when I had really nothing else to do, before the internet, I did fancy myself a fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd watch all the fishing shows, and I thought, well, this is cool. You know, whatever the guy was that did the Bobby Zumi.
Ooh.
Or... there was red, not red green.
Not red green. Oh, okay.
Red. Somebody red.
No idea.
And
I tell you the truth, I don't think I ever watched those shows.
Anyways, I would watch it. Well, I only had two channels, and I would watch these shows, and they shot them in such a way that I thought, wow, that's something that I would like to do. And I did it for like an entire summer, and then I realized, no, I really don't like this. and then there was this other time where a river runs through it,
uh-huh.
And it was Brad Pitt and, you know, other people, and that was based on the fly fishing was what kept them all together or something like that. It's been a long time since I've seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But all I remember is fly fishing, and there was shade and sun coming from the left, and it was a golden hour, and it was like, oh, that's something that I'd like to do. So I found myself one of those fly fishing poles. I still have it.
Ooh.
And I got some, I don't know, fly fishing line, and I thought, well, I could tie flies too. Maybe that would be that would also be fun.
Yeah, that would
and,
be. You'd be good at that.
I might be.
Oh, yeah. Have you tried it?
I did,
uh-huh.
But I didn't. And then, like I said, the internet showed up, and you know other stuff. So I decided that. Maybe fishing isn't my thing because I was a catch and release guy,
right?
Because I didn't feel there was any point in me killing a fish
because you're not hungry.
I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah, okay.
And nobody else really eats it in the house, so I said to myself, well, maybe I find a different hobby. Oh, no, I think it was radio. I think radio was another
along,
part
huh?
of the hobby. And people were probably saying, gee, I wish you would have stuck to fishing.
No, I'm for one, I'm glad you didn't stick to fishing, okay? Because this has been a lot of fun and a learning experience for me all along the time.
In any case, long story short, No, I don't.
I'll add to that. Have you ever gone ice fishing? You know, not fishing for ice, but you bore a hole in the ice.
I have fished for ice. But no, there was a time in my life where the ice out there in the bay would freeze solid, like, I don't know, 4 foot thick or whatever it is. It was back in the day, back when it used to get really cold, and it was cold like from, I don't know, September to, you know, what, April. July?
Oh.
And
not that far back, though.
I don't know. A long time ago.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I want to go out there and try that ice fishing. That looks kind of neat. Once again, the TV said, that looks fun. I never got around to doing it.
Oh.
So long story short, never got around to doing it.
Well.
I this year might have been good year.
To try it.
To go and try it. You know, you don't really know people who do that. So I don't travel in those circles.
That's funny when you think it. When I think about, you just brought a memory back for me when I thought about taking friends out for a snowshoe on a lake, Lake of Bays, and the snow was, you know, like from your stand up, and it's just above your knees. That's how deep the ice was, and the snow was perfect on top of that.
Yeah,
for snowshoeing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we got out of the lake, and one of the young ladies in the group said, "What are those things over there? Are they warm-up huts?"
And that was it.
And I said, "Oh yeah, well, they are in a way a warm-up hut, but they probably put it over. They put it out where they wanted to do ice fishing." And she said, "I've never seen that. I've never done that." And a whole bunch in the group said, "Neither have we. Can we go over and see?
Maybe they'll let us. Maybe they'll let us in their little hut."
So, I have my fur hat on.
Your Russian hat?
I wouldn't call it.
It's a Russian hat.
No, it's not a Russian hat.
Yes, it is.
No.
I've seen it.
It's
Russian.
It is not. It's based on
Russian.
My fur hat on one of those shows from way up north in the Yukon, and it was the guy, Tatusis. And so we...
North of 60?
No, I don't... was it north of 60? Maybe.
What do you mean? Gordon Tatusis?
Tina Keeper was in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably north
of
60.
Yeah, but Gordon Tatusis had a hat.
Yeah.
You remember that? It wasn't a Russian hat. It was one made by the Cree in the community where they live. And it's styled after that.
Anyway,
So we had Mary had somebody do that. And so I've got this nice fur hat. I think it's made out of wolf. And
might be coyote.
Well, not likely, because the coyotes, they're darn afraid of it. They'd come and cuddle up.
Okay, because they said, "Hey, he's got one of my cousins on his head."
he's pretty strong if he can carry one of those.
anyway, stay away from him.
Hey, back to my ice fishing story. We all snowshoe over to it, and this one guy pops out of his hut, and he's a little leery.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted to know whether or not... First question.
Brezhnev is knocking on his door.
First question. Uh-huh. Are you with MNR? Oops. I had to reassure him that I am not from MNR.
I'm from the USSR.
I'm not here to check on what he's doing or anything. But the folks with me have never seen ice fishing before. And we were across the lake there, and we decided we would come, and they would ask questions. Would you be willing to answer them? Well, my goodness, I had a wonderful story from him about, how long it takes to come out and put up the site, you know, drilling the hole every night.
Yeah, oh yeah, it would freeze every
yeah,
every
and,
time.
And, you know, with their friends. So, you know, three of the snowshoers got to go into the hut.
Nice.
To see it.
And, did they take their shoes off?
Yeah, they did. Don't you always take your shoes off?
Before going in, yeah.
And before going inside. Anyway, they got to go in. And then, this was the fun part, he handed them a rod, but it's... They want to know the rod sticks out straight, but why has it got two sticks coming out of it, going perpendicular to the rod? And he said, well, if you ever drop it when there's a fish on it, you want to be able to stop it from going in that hole.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And he said, watch. And he just took it and dropped it down on the ice. And you, no matter what you do to kick it around or anything, it would not go in the hole.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so... I learned something that day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway, the kids had a great time. All the way back, what was the conversation on snowshoes? Where do we get a drill? They wanted to do their own fishing. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. But that comes to the story that we want to talk about. Do you know anything about Wetlands Canada, a group?
I have no idea,
no,
Doug.
Okay. First Nations and volunteers that... get out to help out getting something on lakes that might be useful for different types of fish. Well, I'm going to tell you about this group that went out on Lake Kennebec. It's sort of northwest of Charlotte Lake.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they actually went out and they got a whole lot of stone, you know, those big river rock kind of stones.
Uh-huh.
And enough to fill what is called a dance floor. Now, a dance floor would be 40 feet by 72 feet.
Okay.
A good-sized dance floor.
Is that a ballroom?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I saw close-up photos, better than the one that I have here, that showed how far across the shoreline that they put all these rocks. But they're out on the ice with the rock.
Out on the ice with the rock.
Yeah, and the rock's on top of the ice.
Okay.
What's your question? I see it in your face. Go ahead.
I have no questions.
They brought in a couple.
But yeah. This is for you. Why would they do such a thing, Douglas?
Well, I'm about to tell you that.
All right.
10 tons of rock.
So they can.
Do you know how many? Never mind.
10 tons.
10 tons of
and
rock.
And what do you get? Another
hey, are
day
you
older
are
and
you writing
this.
A song? Okay. Well, they did this. They took it out there, and they actually are going to build a nursery for walleye.
Oh, okay.
And but what is going to happen is that in the spring, let's hope it wasn't today, you know, with the weather the way it is and melting the snow and the ice and on the lakes. But they had to wait for the winter so that they could actually get out on the ice and lay out all these rocks. And they're river rocks, right? They're all been washed and rounded, that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they come out of rivers. And we're at a point now where, you know, they could spread it out, get it set. And there were a lot of volunteers from the Charlotte Lake First Nation, the Algonquin First Nation, and Springwood Cottage Resort. So you got two different groups there helping out. And, you know, if they can increase the nursery for walleye, that would be great. So anyway, so I'm going to let you share a little bit of this, and then we'll go to some music.
So the Watersheds Canada Fish Habitat expert, mm-hmm. Melissa Dackers, she proudly keeps adding up her charity's fish habitat projects. So this includes work on the Lake Kennebec on February the 4th, so that's
recent
past.
Yeah.
watersheds, Canada has completed 77 fish habitat projects.
Wow.
And 27 of those are restored and enhance a walleye spawning beds.
Hmm. I wonder if the Watershed Canada has a lot of walleye fishermen.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Good chance. Maybe it's just some do-gooders.
No.
Do-gooders out there like, oh, yeah, I can help haul some rocks for you.
Why would more walleye in a lake be beneficial? That would be my question for Melissa. I'll write it down.
Probably for the...
We'll interview her.
Fishing. So that project was funded by Safari Club International. Mm-hmm. It's the Ottawa Valley chapter of Springwood Cottage Resort. Oh, there you go. That's the reason. Last fall, Melissa led a team across the lake in boats loaded up with high-pressure water pump, hoses, brushes, and other equipment to remove silt and algae from the existing spawning shoal.
Wow. Just what you want.
See, now I would have thought they leave that stuff there so that...
Well, the algae is not great.
Oh, it's that foreign algae?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's the kind that, causes blooms.
Glows.
Yeah, it's poison.
Yeah, not good for you. Not good for you, not good for fish.
Yeah. Anyway, now we just wait for spring and see what happens, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be good. All right.
I for one, can't wait.
Yes, you can. You're going to have to. It doesn't come until March 21st. Oh, my goodness. March 21st. That means we have one more in February.
Yeah, only one more in February.
And three in March. That
means amazing, 'cause
four radio shows before spring.
Yeah, and I was thinking to myself, gosh, it was just New Year's Day. Like
it
last
feels
week,
like it,
and
doesn't
then it's like the practically the end, middle, anyways, of February.
All right. Do you want to, Mike Byrne?
Grateful
Son. Would that be all right?
Sounds fine.
All right.
Ducks Unlimited Canada works with landowners and other conservation-minded partners to improve outcomes for communities and wildlife. Supporting vital ecosystems which contribute to water quality and quantity, soil health, support agriculture and economy, mitigate severe weather events, and provide opportunities for recreational access to nature. Together, we are unlimited. Learn more about programs and partnerships at ducks.ca.
Hey, this is Cleo, and I hope you folks will join me Tuesdays at 5 for my new show, All Tunes. From punk rock to folk, we got it all. Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM. See you Tuesday.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
My name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
Respect the gift. Respect the gift. gotta give it all you got.
Long ago, back when the world was new, the birds had no feathers. It was difficult for them in those days. When the sun shone down bright, they were too hot. When the wind blew and the seasons turned to the long white time, they were cold and they shivered in the forest. And so it was that the Creator took pity on them and sent down a message to them in a dream. All the birds gathered together in council to discuss the dream they had all had, because that dream was a message from the Creator, and that message was this. If they would gather together in council and appoint one bird to be their messenger, that bird could go to the skyland and bring back clothing for all the birds. The eagle, who was the chief, sat on the council rock, and the discussion began. Who could fly high into the skyland that long distance to bring back clothing for the birds? Everyone wanted to go, but some of the birds were too small. Their wings were too weak. The great eagle could fly the highest of all, but as the chief of the birds, he had to stay with his people. So finally it was decided that Buzzard, with his long, strong wings, would be the one to fly and take the message to the Creator that they were ready to accept that gift of clothing. Buzzard began to fly. He flew and he flew through the sky. He flew for so long that he became hungry. He had forgotten to eat before he left on his journey. He looked down, and there by the side of the lake, he saw some rotten fish. He was so hungry, he flew down and he ate those rotten fish. And then, feeling better, he began to fly again. He flew higher and higher up toward the skyland. Higher and higher he went, so high that the heat of the sun shone down on his bald head. It was difficult for Buzzard to continue. That heat was so great, it burned the top of his head. But he was determined to carry the message of all the birds up to the skyland, to the Creator. And so he continued. Up and up he flew until at last he came to the skyland where the Creator waited. Buzzard, Creator said, you have done well. You have been brave and determined. You have carried the message of your people to me. I see that you wish to receive this gift from me of clothing. And so the birds will have clothes, and you will take it back to them. But Buzzard, since you were the messenger, and you were so determined and brave, I will give you the first choice of what clothing you will have to wear. And then Creator took Buzzard to a place where there were hung many suits of clothing, all of them made of beautiful feathers. Buzzard looked around. As the messenger for all the birds, he would have to pick the very best suit of all. And so, as he looked, Creator came to him and said, now, Buzzard, you must remember this. Any one of these suits of feathers will fit you when you put it on. If you do not like it, simply take it off, and it will go to another bird. But remember, once you have tried it on and taken it off, it can never be yours again. Buzzard understood, and he began to look. Now there was a beautiful suit with red feathers. He tried it on. It had a little black mask on it. It was very bright and nice, but only red, that was not enough. So he took that suit off, and it went to the cardinal. Now there was another suit with a gray back and a red vest and some black on it, a little bit of white. He tried that on. Not quite showy enough. That one went to Robin. There was a yellow and black suit. This, too, was nice, but the messenger of all the birds, must have many colors in his suit of feathers. And so Buzzard took that suit off, too, and it went to Goldfinch. One by one, Buzzard tried on one suit of feathers after another. The creator patiently waited and watched. Until finally, Buzzard tried on a suit that was so tight it didn't cover his legs. It left his bald, red, sunburned head bare. And the feathers were brown and dirty. And Buzzard looked at himself, and Buzzard was not pleased. "Ugh," he said, "this suit is the worst of them all." And the creator said, "Buzzard, it is the last of all the suits. It has to be yours." So it came to be that from that day on, Buzzard wore that suit of dirty feathers. And ever since then, too, because he stopped to eat those rotten fish on his journey, Buzzard has had an appetite for things which are long dead. But still, when he flies high in the sky with his wings spread up there close to the skyland, you may remember that he was the messenger for all the birds. And despite his dirty suit of feathers, he still has reason to be proud. And that is how that story goes. Ho, hey.
Kaiowa jine yo, hey ho. Kaiowa jine, kaiowa jine. Kaiowa jine yo, hey. Kaiowa jine. Jine yo he ho he, kayo wa jine, kayo wa jine, kayo wa jine yo he ho, kayo wa jine, kayo wa jine.
Making a noise in this world. I have the real honor of being here with Rick Revell. Actually, I'm at Rick's house, and Rick is the author of three books now. I Am Algonquin was the one that actually we had a lot of fun sharing here on CFRC, and the second one is Algonquin Spring, and that's out now and being used by students all over Canada. And Algonquin Sunset is the latest book that Rick's ready to talk about. So, Rick Revell, welcome to Aboriginal Voices.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Doug, for having me, and I always enjoy coming here. And like, what the people don't know that we've talked for an hour and a half before we even typed on the tape recorder. So that's what it's like when you and I get together. We share information
and we have some fun. So we're talking about this literacy project, and the reason you and I are getting together is to share with people here at CFRC a little bit about being an author. Getting language together, because you're writing about Aboriginal languages from across the Turtle Island, and then also doing a lot of research. So as an author, I want you to talk with them in mind about the young people who are going to try and research and write stories, but also for parents and grandparents who may pick up a book like your books and read to young people and their family, and young people being anybody younger than they are, okay? And so, conversation about what's in the books, but you spend a lot of time researching them. Yes. So let's start with the research first.
Well, my third book, I am very happy to say for Algonquin Sunset that I've been able to put the pronunciations in. And that's been like 5 or 6 years of in-depth research to get this right. For my first book, I could not do it, because I could not find a talking dictionary or a book or a dictionary that would lay out the phonics of the pronunciation. For Algonquin Spring, I would have been able to do it, but only for one language, the Mi'kmaq language, and that's Joe Wilmot. Him and his group in Restigouche, Quebec, have this wonderful talking dictionary online, Mi'kmaq language, over 2,000 words. And I think I've told you this story before. When I sent out, for the second book, I was sending out the manuscript to elders to for them to vet it and make sure, you know, I wasn't writing anything stupid or wrong, because that's my biggest fear, is some native person saying, where'd you get this? I've never heard of that. So anyway, I got a lead, and I phoned Joe Wilmot and said, could I send you cut down a couple manuscripts? And he said, yes, of course. And I said, I've been using the Mi'kmaq language, and I found this wonderful Mi'kmaq talking dictionary site, and it's pronounced by a young girl, an elder lady, and an elder man, and the pronunciations are so wonderful, and I get the pronunciation, the ancient translation, and then I click on that word, and it goes to another page, and I play the pronunciations, and he says, you know that Joe guy? I said, yeah, that guy, that's me. I said, uh-oh. Yeah. So I send him the manuscript, and, you know, it's full Mi'kmaq words. It comes back, and I only made one mistake. I used a Malisite word for a little person, and he gave me the proper word, and I'm like, oh, my God. It was like, oh, big, heavy sigh. I'm done. For me, the most, it's a success for me when I get it right. And I'm fervent in research, because I... So afraid of getting it wrong. So in my third book, I was able to... I've introduced the Lakota language. I've introduced the Anishinaabe language, also using the Amoani, the Algonquin language, and the Mi'kmaq, and I've been able to put pronunciations in. For the Anishinaabe language, the University of Minnesota has a college... It might be called King's College or Williams College or something. I don't know exactly what it... Within the university, and they have this thing up in Canada. We call it Native Studies. They call it Indian Studies down there. And the students are responsible for the talking dictionary that's online. And I phoned them up, and I thanked them profusely for looking after this, because it's immensely important to me. And it's a wonderful Anishinaabe talking dictionary line with pronunciations, and I get that, and I take the pronunciations off that. 95% of this new book, I have the pronunciations for. If I can't put the pronunciation in, I don't fake it. Mm-hmm. And in a couple of them, I would if I couldn't get the pronunciation, I'd have to listen to it online, and I'd listen to it, and I'd write it down, and I'd call my wife down, and I said, does that sound like what I've written down? And so I'm really proud of the third book, that when a grandparent is reading to the child, or a high school student is reading it, they get the native word first, the pronunciation, and then the meaning. Mm-hmm. And it might seem like it's cluttered, but it's not, and I put it the first couple times, and the next time you might have to go look in the glossary for it, and everything's there, and it's like a big dictionary at the back and a dictionary in the front, because you're learning. And for me, that's native literacy. These are dying languages, but they're being spoken, and all I want to do is get people talking about it. And they say, did you read Rick Revell's book? He's using, in the vernacular, he's using the Lakota words. Now, you don't open up my book and all you see is native writings. I use it for native names. I use it for animals and places. And you might go a couple pages and you won't see a native name. And then you might be on one page, you might see three of them. So it flows. If I can say it like that, yeah. I'm just very proud that I was able to put the pronunciations in, and I use a guy down in South Dakota. His name is Robert Many Horses. I talked to him about legends, and I talked to Joe Wilmot about his language, and it's been fun doing it. I did that all in one breath. Did you just read that?
Yeah. No, you're talking about the actual language that you're putting into it, and trying to keep that set. And the talking dictionaries, that may be something that people might like to do to extend their own learning after they finished reading your book. We're talking a little bit about Algonquin Sunset.
Yep.
That's the latest book. When does it come out?
Probably in about a year. I just sent it to my publisher last week. And in all these glossaries, there's websites where you can go to these talking dictionaries.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Yeah, so people can go there and hear the words. Yes, I sent it to them. It was supposed to be in the 15th of May, so today's the 19th or 20th, and so they've had it, and it'll take at least a year of editing processes and designing the book cover. They've done an excellent job in the first two book covers. I really love them, and I hope, you know, they do as good a job this time. I hope you're listening, Dundurn. And I still, there's four more manuscripts out that elders will get back to me, and then I'll add.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Because you've done the manuscript, and so the writing process and the layout and how you want it by chapters and so on. And so it's gone to elders in different, for this last one, Algonquin Sunset, it takes place in more than just the area where we're sitting here in Kingston area. It goes out. So have you picked elders in different areas to respond?
Yes, I got a guy, Robert Manyhorses in South Dakota. And they get the raw manuscripts. So when I have to include a letter with them, I say, don't go through there and try worry about correcting spelling mistakes or language mistake. There's four more editing jobs. He's going to go. I just want you to get the basis of what's going on. Robert Manyhorses he lives on the Lower Brewery Reserve in South Dakota. He's a drug and alcohol worker. He's a real cool guy. Marty Ford, who's the superintendent of the Frontier School Board in Manitoba, largest school board in Canada. She corrects me on this geographically, and also the largest school board in Manitoba. Joe Wilmont from the Listigouche community and his daughter Silver. They read my books down in on the border of New Brunswick in Quebec with the Mi'kmaq community down there. I have a guy in Kingston, Robert Thibault. He's with Accutones. He was the president of Accutones. And then Annie Smith St. George's. She's a resident. She's the elder in resident for the Museum Man. Oh. And she and her husband read it. They've liked every one of my books, so really happy there. And then Willie Bruce, another Métis elder that lives in Montreal, and he's like a healer, knows about herbs and that. He always enjoys it. So that's who gets it. And I'm probably missing somebody there.
But that's quite a few. So
they're scattered all over the country.
That's right. So anyone who's going to be reading your books, I'm Algonquin, Algonquin Spring, or when the next one comes out a year from now,
Algonquin
Sunset, then people will be able to sit down and know that it's not just Rick Revell's book and his words and the way he put it together, but it's also Rick Revell's writing after doing all the research, and then it's been read by quite a few people. And that's a broad section of people. So then the next question is, what kind of feedback do you get from kids with your books?
It depends on the grade. I always love it. Carolyn DeGroote, and you introduced me to this wonderful school, Perth Road Public School, and grade 5 class. And the first time when my publishers came out with it, they said grade 7 and up. And I'm going to this grade 5, 6 class, and Mr. Groot had been reading the book to them, and they had so many questions. And afterwards I said, I can't believe how they grasped this book. So then I go to a grade 8 class, different questions whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I love the grade 5. Like, they'll ask you all sorts of questions, like, you know, how'd they make this knife and that, and where'd you get your boots? You know? You know? And then, in elementary school, lots of questions. You go to high school, everybody sits there, very quiet. They love to be read to. That's what the teachers tell them. I've did quite a few high schools, and they don't ask very many questions. You'll get one extrovert there, he'll ask a few questions, but keep right on talking, because I don't know if they don't want to embarrass themselves in front of their peers or whatever. They're more inhibited than the elementary school kids. The elementary school kids, they'll all ask questions. Everybody's got their arms up. So I have great fun. In fact, I'm going on a canoe trip. I think it's June 6th with a teacher. She teaches Native Studies at QECVI, and I was there for her two classes, and she's bringing me on the canoe trip to tell stories.
So she's taking her old class.
At Gould Lake, fantastic. And she invited me to go on the canoe trip with them. So, yeah, sure, fine. I'll have a...
Oh, you can have fun with that out in the woods and talking. Any stories from the first two books would fit right in with, except the ones in the snow. But that's good.
Or the battle scenes. We don't want
to. No, yeah.
We don't want to recreate any of those. She said, can you bring some native recipes?
Oh.
So I said, I tell you what. So we don't have to go out and kill a moose or something. Which I wouldn't know too much about how to skin it or anything. That's my stepfather's era and grandfather. Here's a recipe for cedar tea and for pine tea. So which is both a little bit different because one's about scooping the scum off and the other one's about there. So I gave her the recipe and we'll probably have some tea. But I said, I don't put up forest fires, so we've got to make sure about these campfires.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. So you'll have a lot of fun and those are high school students. You're going to
I think they're grade 10. And this is the last year of QE, so.
So you're bringing us back around to the literacy aspect that we're trying to share with listeners here in our literacy project at CFRC. You wrote the books, so you don't have to read the books to them because you already know the stories that you have. But you're taking some literacy and you're bringing it as storytelling. So for parents or grandparents, aunts and uncles getting involved with high school age students, elementary school students, after reading a book, discussing it, and giving time to think about it, then doing something like you're saying is possibly the best way to feel like you've been in the book.
Yeah. Or do some research. Guys that I know that haven't read books before, they're hunters and they read my book, they love it. I have a friend that he has a brother-in-law that lives in Nova Scotia. He's a fisherman. He's only read two books in his life. My first book and my second book.
Oh, wow.
And soon be my third book. He's amazed at it because he feels like he's read out in the woods. And I never was a hunter, but I went out with my stepfather hunting, fishing, so I remember all these wonderful things that happened. We ate lots of wild meat when I was a child. But that's all part of the literacy. And when they're done, they can research it. Mm-hmm. They can go and they can the stories. I've woven two very interesting true stories in Algonquin Sunset. One was the Crow Creek Massacre that happened in 1320. And I've woven in, I gave my postulation about what probably happened, but that's just what I think might have happened, and without going into it. And the other one was about the famous artifacts found in Beardmore, Ontario, which are now at the ROM in storage, because when they found them in the 1930s, they thought it was the real thing, and they put it on display. And then somebody said, no, it's not the real thing. It was a Viking axe, a Viking sword, and a Viking shield. So I've written that in my third book about how it probably got there. So they can do some research, and that's part of literacy. Is okay. He says this is true. Let me read more about this. Let me be interested in this. And the same with the native languages. I put the websites in the glossaries. Go listen to them. If you only learn one word, first word that I ever learned, and it always sticks into me because it just rolls off the tongue, was deer in the Amawani language, Wawashkishi. And I just love the way that flows. Mm-hmm. And that's, a lot of people think that I can speak all these languages. I said, no, I'm 64 years old. I'm having trouble retaining a lot of the stuff I have now. But it sure is fun researching them and hoping that people get something out of that. And literacy is many things, and I think one is appreciating who came before you and reading about them, because you never know where you're going unless you know where you came from. I bought a 26-volume set of the Old West from Time Life, and I'm devouring them. And it's amazing about all the stuff that I didn't know about that happened in the history. It's just all the individual stories, and that's what. And I go online and research these things, and think, oh my goodness, this really happened. So that's what I hope to put in my book. That whenever I talk about the natives hunting or these battles, the final battle in my third book takes place in the exact same spot that a battle will take place 400 years later between the same two combatants in the same spot. So do a little research.
Rick Revelle, thank you very much for being part of the Aboriginal Voices and Literacy Project, and I really appreciate your enthusiasm, and I hope people get a lot out of this.
Well, thank you very much for having me on again. I always enjoy talking with you, Doug, and someday we'll just turn the tape recorder on and do 5 hours worth of monologue between the two of us.
It'll be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Good.
Kimmy Wetch.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.